This is the main show, and you are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
I'm Zach Owens.
This is Jessica Taylor Byers.
This is Brent Hahn.
In this episode, Cale Staton has Marty Thomas, also known as Buff, on the podcast. They talk about how he overcame living with a non-hunting family and really grew into hunting as a lifestyle. They discuss Black Widow bows and why he is loyal to them, a phone call from Dr. Ed Ashby, building an elephant-killing arrow, killing and surviving an elephant hunt in Mozambique with his traditional bow, plans for the year on the hunts, and why he is a bad trophy hunter. I hope that you enjoy the show.
This is Marty Thomas, and you are listening to Archery Maniacs.
Awesome. My name is Cale Staton, one of the co-hosts here for Archery Maniacs, and I have Marty Thomas on here. I know him by a different name because he doesn't know, but I've been watching him on a hunting forum for many years, post his hunting adventures on there and stuff that he gets to go on and has done over the years. And I don't think there's anybody more famous on our hunting forum than you are. You've had pretty epic hunts on there.
Yeah, well, pretty much growing up in rural East Texas, that nickname of Buff, my grandpa hung that on me when I was 2 years old. I've known people for 25 years that don't know me by my real name.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So when you called me earlier and said, this is Marty Thomas, it kind of took me back a second. I'm like, oh, wait, that's Buff.
Yeah. There's people I've been doing business with my whole life that don't know what my real name is.
Right. So I've watched you on TexasBowhunter.com as the hunting forum that we are both on. But anyway, everybody has a story about how they got started in archery. And can you just give me a rundown of how that happened with you?
Well, yeah. And like you say, you can edit it so you can cut out a whole bunch of the minutia that you don't want. But it makes my whole deal fairly unique. I grew up in a household where my parents didn't hunt. I had a grandfather that lives quite a distance away from me, and he and I don't hunt when I was a kid, but my teachers in archery when I was about 10 years old, the Longview Club used to do a little prep for deer season. About 3 weeks before deer season, they would open up their archery range, and anybody who wanted to could come in, and they gave seminars and helped people tune their bows. And understand, this was back when everybody was shooting recurves, but I had always wanted to hunt, dreamed of it. My mother would buy me Outdoor Life and Field and Stream magazines, were the only two magazines back in the 70s that, or I guess this is the 60s, but anyway, she would buy me the outdoor magazines and garage sales, and I had a stack of them from floor to ceiling, and I read all about all these great hunts. But growing up in East Texas, I was probably 16 or 17 before I ever left my home county. So a story about somebody hunting elk in Montana or Colorado, they might as well have been talking about going to the moon as far as my little 10-year-old brain could wrap around. But anyway, they had this... They did this open house, and my mother carried me there, dropped me off, and left me, and then came back and picked me up that afternoon, and it just scarred my brain. I mean, all these old men walking around with funny hats on, shooting recurve bows and the back quivers, and just I was enthralled with every aspect of it. So I hounded her until once again the good old garage sale came through and she bought me a 40-pound wing recurve and a half a dozen arrows. Well, where we lived, I could go out behind my house and chase swamp rabbits. And the good thing about swamp rabbits are they're not real wild. So I could shoot at one of them and, of course, miss him. And he had run off 50, 60 yards. Then I could spend 20 or 30 minutes hunting my arrow. And when I found it, well, I could go back and that rabbit would pretty much be sitting where he was. And I might chase a rabbit around for 6 or 8 hours before I finally lucked out and hit him. But that was my total involvement in hunting until I was about 16 years old, which there wasn't wasn't any deer in East Texas back then. So all we ever hunted was squirrels and rabbits. But I read all of the adventure books, you know, the Peter Capstick and all that. And like I say, that it just seemed an impossibility that I would ever get to do any of that type of hunting. But I was always enthralled with the bows. And then once I got grown, well, I was able to finally get the money to get on a deer lease where there was a few deer. And then I travel for a living. I sell mining equipment. So I was able to parlay that into getting to hunt in some of the coolest places in the whole world just because I would carry my bow with me everywhere I went. And whether I just wound up shooting my bow in a hotel parking lot or if I could finagle a hunt, well, it gave me the ability or the opportunities to hunt and do a lot of hunting in Africa, a lot of hunting in Australia, Canada, Alaska, just wherever I was going to work. Well, I would, as soon as I found out I was going, well, I would go to work trying to find a place to hunt while I was there.
Oh, wow. It's pretty easy to get a trad bow onto a plane.
Oh, sure. Well, and back then you could carry it. I literally had a little soft case. I would take my bow apart and carry it onto the airplane with me. It wasn't any bigger than a briefcase.
Oh, wow. Wow. So have you always shot traditional bows?
Yes, sir, pretty much. I'll take spells through the years where I'd get frustrated, or like I had a buddy that owned an archery shop in Longview, and he got me to shoot compound bows for him and the 3D shoot some just to help him sell equipment. But always when it mattered, I would always go back to my trad bows just because I was eat up with them. Having owned a bow hunting ranch, I'm a big fan of compound bows, and I've always been fascinated by how fast they are, you know, because I'd shoot my bow 170, 180 feet per second at best, and then have a buddy come over with a compound to get me heavy tuned or whatever, and he's burning it out there at 280 feet per second. It's just amazing. But No, I don't have anything against compounds. It just, I always was eat up with the whole trad adventure, you know, as far as the challenge of it and how hard it is to get close. And I like watching my arrows fly. And that's one of the biggest things you lose when you go to a compound is half the fun for me. I can get two or three buddies together and we can occupy ourselves for hours shooting at a Coke can at 20 yards. Whereas with a compound, pretty much know you're going to hit that Coke can every time you shoot at it. Well, with a recurve, you're subject to miss anything. I mean, I might shoot a cat squirrel in the head at 15 yards and then spend all the rest of the day ricocheting arrows off a tree. But so it's just more entertaining to me. And like I say, I shoot the big 5.5-inch tall yellow or white feathers, and I just like to watch my arrows fly. When I shoot a compound, it's more akin to shooting a rifle, in as much as you're looking through the sight and you pull the release and it instantly, that arrow is just in the target. I mean, it just is so fast, and with the little old bitty veins that everybody uses nowadays, it all just kind of happens faster than my brain can think, I guess, because I can't see them.
Right. No, I understand that. And I bet all those years hunting those rabbits is that developed, you didn't know it as a kid, but that developed your stalking skills.
Oh, no doubt. Like I say, when I was growing up, everybody hunted cat squirrels and rabbits because that's all we had. And I think chasing those cat squirrels around with a .22 and chasing rabbits around with a bow definitely helped with understanding how to slip up on something.
Right, for sure. What are you shooting right now? What's your bow that's your go-to?
My go-to bow right now, I Black Widow did me a kindness, oh, Lord, 40 years ago. And like I say, you're going to edit all this out, so I'll give you way more than you wanted.
No, well, keep going. We're not going to edit any of this stuff out.
Well, Black Widow did me a kindness. When I was about 19 years old, maybe 20, I had my first kid, and I was too poor to pay attention. I mean, I I worked 40 hours a week and had about 20 bucks a week left over after all the bills were paid. So we was poor. And anyway, I did some extra work on weekends on a little old ranch down the street, welding on some fence and whatever. And I came up with 250 bucks, which was a lot of money. And a fella had a Black Widow bow for sale for 250 bucks. Well, I bought it and I shot it for about a year and didn't know. This was way before the internet, way before it was really, really hard to know what you were doing if you didn't have somebody to help you. And back then, once again, without the internet, it was hard to meet other people who knew anything about it. There was no such thing as archery shop. And I right. know now that I shot arrows that were too light for the bow, just the weight okay. of the arrow. And I right. busted that bow. It came unglued in the riser. Oh, and wow. like I said before, I was dirt poor. So I put it in a box and mailed it back to Black Widow with a letter that just said, hey, I don't have any money to buy another bow. This bow was 10 years old when I bought it secondhand, but if there's anything you can do, if there's a way to re-glue this riser, if you can run a piece of all thread through it, if there's anything that you can do to fix this bow, I would really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Marty Thomas. Well, I mailed it off to him. And about a month later, I got a package back, and it was a brand spanking new bow, limbs and all.
Oh, my gosh.
So I've been really, really brand loyal to them, and it's worked out well for them because I've probably bought a dozen bows from them since then because they didn't have to do that. Right. There was no even nope. consideration that the bow could have been under any kind of warranty. And so I've pretty well stuck with Black Widow ever since. And for about the last 20 years, I used a 74-pound PSA and did the majority of my hunting with that. I've got an 83 that I use for big stuff, you know, like Australian water buffaloes and that kind of animal. But I shot most everything with a 74-pound bow. Well, 5 or 7 years ago, I bought a 65-pound short riser Black Widow. And, man, I just okay. fell in love with it. And I enjoyed the comfort of the 74-pound bow, whereas if I hit a shoulder blade or whatever, well, with an 800-grain arrow, I was going to drive it on through anyway. I just shot this little short bow so well that I just happened to look up a couple of years later and realize I was doing 90% of my hunting with it, and it's still the bow that I hunt with most of the time.
Right. What broadheads are you shooting?
For the majority of my hunting, I'm using German Kinetics, the okay. 180 grain, big inch okay. and 7/8 cut head.
Okay.
For big stuff, I use those tough heads. They're a 400 grain okay. broadhead.
Oh, wow.
Real long, real narrow. They're like a 1-inch wide cut, but they're about 3 inches long. And I use it when I hunt something really big, just from the just trying to get the weight up front and get the penetration.
Right. So, yeah, 400 grain up front. And are you using carbon shafts?
Well,
or?
For what that is, what I used the tough head for was for the elephant, and I used I believe 375 grain broadhead with 100 grain titanium insert broadhead adapter. Then 100-grain brass insert in the end of the arrow with a Carbon Heritage 350 shaft with a Beeman 60-70 shaft full length inside of that with about 6 inches of 22-16 aluminum arrow glued over the top of that like a footer just to trying to get my weight up above 1,200 grains. And it didn't actually weigh 1,200 grains, but it wound up being 1,170. And so that's kind of what we went with. But, man, that tough is.
So who helps you? Right? I mean, that's crazy, you know, how you built the arrow that way. Who is Did you figure all this on your own?
No, sir.
Or how did you figure out how to build that arrow like that?
I had posted on Trad Game that I was finally able to get a permit to hunt an elephant, because it's just literally impossible to get a permit to shoot an elephant with a traditional bow. I mean, I tried on and off for years and years. I shot a Cape Buffalo about 10 years ago. And when I was finally able, it took me 3 or 4 years to talk somebody into letting me try that. But I had went on a hunt with Dries Visser Safaris and fortunately shot very well and killed 14 animals, 14 arrows. And when I went to leave, he just walked up and said, "Hey, I know I told you no before, but if you want to come back and try to get a Cape Buffalo with a recurve, I'll let you, but don't tell anybody." Well, I went back and I was successful with the Cape Buffalo. And so that got me kind of wanting to see if I could get all five of the big five with a recurve, because it just hadn't been done in years and years. And I knew I'd never actually have enough money to shoot a rhino, but I figured if I could get a lion and a Cape Buffalo and an elephant, that I'd just do a dart hunt for a rhino, just to say that I had shot all five of the big five with recurve bow.
Right. Well,
it took probably 6 or 7 years and 30 letters from outfitters and resumes and throwing lots of money at it. I was finally able to get the opportunity to kill a lion with my recurve. Well, that left me with the elephant and the leopard. And pretty much I had decided after years that I was just never going to have the opportunity to shoot an elephant with a recurve bow all over kinetics. Even in the countries where they would allow archery hunting for elephants, you had to have 90 foot-pounds of kinetic energy. You can't get there with a recurve. It doesn't matter how strong you are, because of the speed. And one of the things about a recurve is you have to shoot a certain amount of weight of arrow per poundage of the bow. So no matter what you do, you never get any faster. In other words, if you were strong enough to pull a 200-pound bow, you'd have to shoot a 2,500-grain arrow to keep the bow from blowing up, and you'd never get any faster. So it was just impossible to get to the 90 foot-pounds of kinetic energy with traditional equipment. And I wrote
that. Was a law set up was that laws in Africa?
Yeah,
I guess I didn't know if that was an outfitter or
it's game laws.
Okay.
Well, and it makes sense with a compound, because it's not that hard to do. You know, it doesn't take that elaborate a setup with a compound to get to that. But with a recurve, you just can't get enough speed. Even though you may have all the momentum in the world and be more than capable of killing an animal, you can't get enough speed to meet that criteria. Well, anyway, I had give up on the elephant, and along about the same time, they passed laws outlawing leopard hunting in almost every country over there in Africa. So I kind of just almost forgot about it. But every time I'd go over to work, I usually go to Africa 2 or 3 times a year to work. I would gig 2 or 3 of my buddies about, "Hey, you know, if you could just come up with me an elephant hunt, I'm setting on go." Well, anyway, I got a call one afternoon late from a guy who I had hunted with several times over there named Danny Masson with Lignati Safaris. And he and I had been on a mission to just try to get a bush pig with a recurve bow. And at that point, unsuccessfully, but I had hunted with him 5 or 7 times because he just really great guy. And I could be over there working and just get an afternoon off and call him and say, "Hey, Danny, I'm going to be free tomorrow afternoon. You got a bush pig baited." And I'd run up and hunt with him that one evening and then go back to work the next day. Well, anyway, he ran into a buddy in a bar in Polokwane, and they visited a little bit and, you know, hadn't seen each other in 10 or 15 years. "Well, what are you doing for a living? What are you doing for a living?" Come to find out, his buddy was working for the Mozambique government as a cropper or professional hunter, whatever you'd want to call it. if the crocodiles was killing the ladies washing their clothes, or hippos was attacking fishermen, or if elephants were raiding villages, they would call this guy and he would go and sort it out. Well, Danny said, man, have you ever thought about trying to sell one of those hunts? And old boy told him, oh, man, there is no way anybody would pay to do what I'm doing. He said, this is yellow fever zone. Everybody's got malaria. There's no drinking water. There's no place to sleep. We sleep in the back of my truck. It's as bad as you could imagine it could be. Nobody would pay to go. And he said, man, I know this crazy Texan that wants to shoot elephants. Well, old boy called me, and, you know, and he said, hey, mate, I'm sitting here with my buddy Danny, and he said, you want to shoot an elephant? I said, I do. He said, he told me you want to shoot an elephant with a bow. I said, I do. He goes, you can't kill an elephant with a bow. And I said, well, I've killed 5 Australian water buffalo. I've killed a Cape buffalo. I believe that if you can get me within 20 yards of an elephant, I can kill him. He goes, man, there is just no way. He said, have you ever even seen an elephant? I said, well, I saw one on TV, and he hung up on me.
Oh, my God.
Well, he called me back about an hour later and said, hey, man. You know, and by this point, he's getting pretty looped up sitting in this bar drinking. And he said, if I got you within 20 yards of an elephant and you stuck it with an arrow, it would kill you. And I said, well, it might, or it might run off. He goes, yeah, but you don't understand. These elephants that I'm hunting, the only reason I'm hunting them is because they are killing people, or they never would have called me to come over to, you know, to come shoot them.
Right.
And I said, well, I just believe I can get it done. I just really believe that I can get it done. And he said, ah, there's just no way, no way. I said, man, I will give you $10,000 to get me within 20 yards of an elephant. If I shoot it and it kills it, you get the $10,000. If I shoot it and an arrow bounces off, you get the $10,000. He said, man, if the elephant kills you, how am I going to get my money? I said, I'll give the money to Danny before we go. And then when you get back, you can get the money from him. And he said, oh, you're nuts. You're just nuts. And he hung up. Well, he called me back about an hour later. He said, man, if you're dumb enough to go, I'm dumb enough to take you. But you got to here in 2 weeks, because that's when I'm going back. So I was fortunate. I put a post on Trad Gang, and Dr. Ashby called me and told me how to build the arrow. I don't know. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Everybody in archery should be. Well, I was honored because he literally just called me and said, hey, I understand you're going to try to shoot an elephant with a bow. Here's what you need to do. And he told me how to build.
Oh, my gosh.
And not only him, but the guy that owns Tough Broadheads, and I can't remember his name right this second, which is embarrassing in itself. He had a local machine shop go down and build the titanium adapters because he was worried that a steel adapter might bend if I hit a rib. So he, out of his own pocket, went down and had these titanium adapters built. So there was several people involved in helping me get my equipment put together that quick.
So you had basically a week to get ready, because to get there and stuff.
Yeah. And I called Blackwood and asked them, did by chance on a fluke they have a 100-pound set of limbs laying somewhere? Because the heaviest bow I had was 83 pounds at 28 inches, which I
Right.
And they just laughed and said, man, your 83-pound bow is about as heavy as we ever try to build, and we don't like building them. But I visited with them quite a bit about it, and they said that they didn't think a 100-pound bow would shoot my arrow any faster than my 83-pound bow would, just because of the diminished returns of to get the bow to be 100 pounds. You have to make the limbs so much thicker that it makes the limbs a little bit slower. And so I just changed my form to where I could pull the 83-pound bow 30 inches just to get all I could get out of it.
Oh, wow.
And in the end, it wound up working really well for me.
Yeah, I think so.
And
I think so. So, you know, keep going.
I don't know how much time you're wanting to spend.
I've got podcasts that go 2 hours. So, I mean, I'll spend as much time. I'm not saying that's what we'll do today, but You're just fine. This is great. This is fantastic. I would like to for you to kind of talk about the hunt.
Oh, all right.
You know,
well,
I mean a little bit. So well, keep going.
All right. Well,
this is all great information.
I'm trying to remember right where I was at, but you can splice it all together later.
So I fly
over there, fly to Polokwane, meet with Steen or Stan, however you say his name. I'm not going to try to guess. And we go through the big adventure getting into Mozambique and getting to these villages. And these villages these people just run out to the truck and want to hug your neck. It's hard to describe the terror these people live in. These elephants come off a Kruger in the wintertime. They're hungry. So they come off and they start raiding these villagers' crops. Well, understand there's no welfare. There's no Lone Star cards. If an elephant comes in and eats your garden, you die because you don't have anything to eat. I mean, these are still like straight out of a Tarzan movie, mud huts with thatch roofs on them. And
right.
So they just when they see this government truck pull in there with the hunter in it, man, they are just beside themselves happy. Well, what we'd do is we'd spend the night down by the river, sleep in a tent, and get up every morning and start riding this series of dirt roads. We're probably, I'm going to guess, 180, maybe 200 miles from a paved road. But there's a lot of dirt roads. And so we would ride these dirt roads until we cut the tracks of these elephants. Then we'd fall in behind them and walk all day as hard and fast as we could walk, trying to catch up to them. The problem is with the elephant, even when he's just kind of wandering around, every time he takes a step, he steps about 10 feet. So
right.
Even when they're not traveling, they're just wandering around, they still was walking faster than I could walk. We just couldn't catch up. And the second day, we got into a group, but they got our wind, and we had a cow charge up within about 10 feet of us, just straight at us. But there wasn't a shot with my bow with her facing me. And then when she got ready to leave, she just twirled around and nothing but back hips and went straight away. Well, we walked for either 5 or 6 days all day long. And on about day 6, we lucked out. We got up that morning and it just was breaking camp and a kid come running into the camp. And when I say kid, I'm talking about a 6-year-old. Little kid that's just wow. running through the woods. He tells us that they had got a call, that somebody with a cell phone had got a call from a village of Jojo, J-O-J-O, and that the elephants had raided that village that night, came into the village, tore the roof off of about 6 houses so that they could eat the beds, the thatch beds that these folks were sleeping on, and that they were still close to the village. So we hook them about 70 kilometers from where we was at to this village and get in behind these elephants. And there's 3 guides from the village. The one, what I'd call professional guide that works with the outfitter or the professional hunter every day of his life. And the hunter and myself. So we get in behind these elephants and we're going down this trail and it's thick as you can imagine. And like around here, we've got sawbriars. And if you have to, you can run through them. You can push your way through them. Well, these thorn trees that they've got, it's got thorns on them about 4 inches long, and it's just a solid mat. And so literally we could walk down the game trail, but not to the left or the right, or you was on that trail and that was it. Well, we eased along, and we got in close to them, and my feathers kept getting hung up in the brush, so that the hunter had me take my fanny pack off that had my quiver built on it and give it to the tracker. And I took one arrow in my hand and we eased down this trail. Well, we went down through a dry creek bed. And when we come up there, you could hear the elephants all around us. When they're not inside of each other, they make a noise. It's just kind of a growling, rumbling. It's just a sound their stomach makes. And that's kind of how they keep up with each other in the brush. And those elephants were all over us, but we couldn't see them because of the brush was just so thick. But there's, you know, you just hear just elephants all around us. And so we eased down this creek bed about another 50, 60 yards, popped out, and there was an elephant standing there about 30 yards from us, broadside, reaching up, ripping limbs out of his tree. Well, he gave me the big thumbs up, and I shook my head because I couldn't shoot 30 yards with this 1,200 grain arrow. It flew great out to about 20 yards, and then it just fell. I mean, just the bottom fell out of it. So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant. Well, elephant's standing there ripping trees, limbs out of his tree, and he sees us, but he's not afraid of us. You know, he just kind of picked his head up and flared his ears out like, elephant, hey, you know.
Right.
Well,
I'm here.
We got up about 16, 18 yards from him and stopped. I drew my bow, turned the arrow loose, and just whack, plumb to the feathers. It was just beautiful. And scary at the same time, because the elephant squalled out and ran the direction he was facing. Well, when he did, these other 13 or 14 elephants all started trumpeting and just running back and forth through the brush. They didn't know what was going on, but they knew something wasn't right. So we ran probably 50 or 60 yards away, and all of a sudden there's elephant coming, just head down, just coming. And Steen's just hollering, oh, oh. Oi, boom, he shot that elephant in the face, and it stopped, and his ears came forward, and it stood there for a second and kind of shook its head, and here it come again. Boom, he shot it again. Down it went. Well, we break, and we run about another 100 yards, and we're standing there breathing. You can hear these elephants just tearing the brush down, and then all of a sudden, here's one coming right down the trail we're on, just head down. Boom, he knocked that one down. Well, he hollered, ammo, ammo, ammo. Well, he had given me his box of ammunition, and I had it in my fanny pack that I had given to that guide. I mean, to
is he shooting a double barrel
bolt action
rifle?
Bolt action.
Bolt action, okay.
That I had given to that tracker. That tracker was gone.
Oh,
they
my God.
They left the country. So we were down to one round of ammunition, and these elephants are just running everywhere. So we finally run and get out of them. But we don't really even know where we're at. So we wandered around for a couple hours till we come out on a dirt road, figured out where we was at, got back to his truck, went back to the village. Well, those trackers from the village, they was tickled to see us. They was sitting there eating dinner. It was just like, oh, wow, you're alive. Who'd have thought it?
Oh, my gosh.
But, no, it was the stupidest thing I ever did, because those elephants had every opportunity to kill us. But the whole time I was running, I was thinking to myself, even if they get me, I will have always killed an elephant with a recurve bow.
Right.
So the one that I shot lived probably 30 seconds, maybe 40. He run out there maybe 50 yards, stood there for a second, and just flopped over. It was funny. The rangers off Kruger come out anytime they're – the government hunter shoots elephant. Well, since it's a different government, Kruger's controlled by South Africa, and we were actually in Mozambique. Well, they write a report, you know, this is how many elephants was killed. Here's how many was pushed back on Kruger, whatever. And they get a report for everybody who was there. Well, I was standing there, and they was interviewing the tracker, and he said, big man shoot elephant. Elephant walkie, 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 bleedy, 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 walk, 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 bleedy, 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 poof, no more elephant.
Oh, my gosh. That was the official report,
that was
the
official report. Elephant walk, 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 bleedy, bleedy, bleedy. But, yeah, it was stupid, and I was kind of overwhelmed at how many people came once the word got out, because no matter how poor these people are and how destitute circumstances it seems, at least to an American, that their lives are, everybody's got a cell phone. And within that next morning, we probably was back to the elephant at 7 o'clock in the morning. And by 10 o'clock in the morning, they had made a road into these elephants and there was no less than 100 people there with chainsaws and 5-gallon buckets hauling that meat out, because they literally get no protein. I mean, they're 90% vegetarians, not from free choice, but because there is no meat. And so people came from miles and miles and miles on motorcycles, bicycles, donkey carts, and the men with axes and chainsaws and women with 5-gallon buckets. And it was just amazing to watch them. Within 3 hours, there was nothing left of those elephants but the grass that had been in their stomach. They wasted nothing, which the government got the tusk from all three of them, but there wasn't so much as a toenail on the ground. They took every conceivable edible part of all three of those elephants, and they was gone.
I'm sure they used the bones and everything,
yeah,
huh?
Every part of it.
Wow. And so they ended up, you killed one, and the government tracker
killed two.
Two.
And
so,
then after I
so there was three.
He was going back, and the deal is those elephants come off of Kruger. Well, when they first raid a garden, the villagers can run out there and beat pots and pans together, and the elephants will run off. Well, eventually they'll go out and beat pots and pans together, and one of those elephants will reach over and grab one of those villagers and whoop him against the ground and go, heck, this is nothing but a big monkey. There's nothing to be afraid of. Well, from that point on, they'll boldly walk right into a village and rip the top off a house and throw everybody out of the house and eat any grain they can find in that house and go over to the next one, like you and I opening a pop top, because they
right.
realize that even though they make a lot of noise, people aren't dangerous. So the
right.
government hunter comes in and shoots one or two or three or however many of them until they get the fear of man back in them and go back into on the Kruger.
Okay.
So yeah, once we left, he was not through. He kept pursuing these elephants until he pushed them back on Kruger.
Wow.
Because they literally were killing people. I mean, when I did my report to the South African ranger, I told him elephants were dang lucky that they were born on the continent of Africa and not in Texas. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, if some animal came and ripped the roof off my house and killed my kids, we would kill all of them. Yeah,
yep.
I mean, all of them. That
yep.
would never be tolerated.
Nope.
But it's just nope. kind of a way of life there. It was really strange. One morning we got up and there was about 20 women went by where we were camped carrying their laundry down to the river. And about 10 days earlier, a crocodile had killed a lady washing clothes. But all these women were just hiking on down there to wash clothes. It was just no big, you know, it just considered part of life.
Wow. Just the risk they
yep.
take every day just to survive, just
yep.
live. That's crazy. And the people, you know, people sit here in the United States, you know, thinking that horrible people going over there hunting these animals in Africa and paying to kill them and stuff, and don't realize, you know, we're actually doing them a service.
Oh, well, absolutely.
You know,
if it wasn't, well, in this situation, these elephants were going to be killed by that ranger irregardless, because they were killing
right.
people. But when he
right.
shoots them, that's these people get to eat. They get to survive from the meat off of these elephants
right.
as sort of a payback for not just poisoning them all, and because that's what we'd do in Texas. We wouldn't tolerate that.
Right. No.
And like the
no.
lion, they outlawed shortly after I killed my lion, they outlawed lion hunting in South Africa. And there went from like 70,000 lion in South Africa to about 10,000 lions in South Africa within a year, because if you're a landowner, if you're a farmer or a rancher, and a lion's killing your cattle, if you know that you can sell a lion hunt for $10,000, well, that makes up for losing five or seven cattle. But if those lions
right.
are of no value, if you can't sell a hunt for them, if they're no value to them at all, you're not going to tolerate them killing your cattle, or you're not going to tolerate them killing your game. You know, if you're selling, if a pack of lions kill your kudu that you was going to sell for $2,500, that hurts. But if you know that line's worth $10,000, it doesn't hurt that bad. It hurts, but it has an end return. If there is no way for you to ever sell that a hunt for that line, then he is of no value. Well, you're not going to put up with him killing your kudu. You're going to kill him any way you can, whether it's in a snare, with poison, whatever it takes to keep him from killing your livelihood.
Right, right. You know, that makes sense to me and you, but there's a lot of people out there it makes no sense to.
No doubt.
Or they don't want to hear. They don't want to hear the truth. Is what it really probably comes down to.
But no, like I say, I've been very, very fortunate to go from a kid that laid in the bed at night daydreaming about getting to go to Colorado and chase elk to a grown man that travels for a living and gets to haul his bow everywhere he goes. So I've been really, really, really fortunate.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that has to be your number one hunt. You know, your number one.
I would say probably it was quite an adventure. And in all honesty, the TexasBowhunter.com made it even cooler because my old buddy Minshew had a live thread going. And I don't know how many people were following along with that hunt. And that made it. I mean, I still will occasionally go back and read that thread. He did such a fantastic job with that. But I'm really fortunate in that I like to hunt anything. I can get just as much adrenaline from shooting a pig or a doe as I can from shooting an elk. It's all, for me, it's all about that one arrow, because it doesn't matter. With a trad bow, like I said before, you can miss anything. I mean, you can miss anything. So, and it doesn't matter if right before I go get in my deer stand, I shot 5 arrows into a 2-inch circle. And it doesn't matter that when I get back that night, I might shoot 5 arrows into a 2-inch circle. You only get one shot, you know?
Right.
So it's just that one arrow, that one chance to make a good shot that I can dance a jig from making a really great shot on a rabbit. And it's the same emotion as watching that arrow hit a bear, you know?
Yeah.
And bears are probably my favorite animal to hunt, but I can't figure out what to do with another one. And I know the guys that live in Canada, to them, they're just big hairy pigs. So they shoot a bear every year, skin it, put the meat in the freezer and throw the hide away. But I just can't bring myself to do it. But if I could figure out what to do with the hide, I would hunt them every year, because they're the coolest animal ever been. Especially in Canada. Well, one of the best hunts I went on was actually in Maine. And it's a lot cleaner getting the meat home whenever you shoot one on this side of the border. You don't have to deal with the USDA getting the meat back.
Okay.
But they live in such great country. And it's the animal I always recommend if I'm talking to somebody and they've not done any out-of-state bow hunting. It's always the animal I recommend that they go hunt first, because they live in such really cool country. And yet it should be a fairly easy hunt, because they hunt bears just like we hunt pigs. You know, they bait them up and they're sitting in a tree stand. So it's something that everybody's real familiar with as far as how the hunt kind of works out. And yet it's still bear hunting, because no matter how big it is, if a bear comes in, it doesn't matter if he weighs 50 pounds, he's still big as a bear.
Right.
I mean, that bear are just cool animals to hunt.
Yeah. That's a hunt that I plan on taking my daughter on pretty soon. So we were going to go this next year, but
I can't think of anything right off the top of my head that takes your breath quite like a bear, because they walk around on them little sneaky feet. So you never hear them coming. You just kind of blink your eyes and they're there. It's just like they come up out of the ground. It is a really, really great hunt.
And they all look big, you were saying, too.
They, well, no matter what size they are, they're still big as a bear.
Right.
Because it's a bear.
Right. And we're not used to seeing those things every day or ever. I've never seen one in the wild. So.
Oh, you'll have a blast. They're a really cool animal.
That is, for sure. That's definitely on the list soon for us to go do, for sure. Man, that's awesome. Do you have any hunts lined up this year? I'm sure you can't plan a hunt 2 weeks in advance all the time.
Usually I try to plan something off every year. I'm going to go to T4 Exotics and hunt whitetail again this year with my buddy Dean Titsworth. And I should be going to Africa in June, and I'll probably just do a coal hunt.
Okay.
You can go over there for pennies on the dollar. The last one I went on cost me $1,500 for unlimited non-trophy animals, because just like here in Texas, where a wildlife biologist comes in on a ranch and says, okay, you need to take 20 bucks and 60 does or whatever that number is. Well, on those big ranches in South Africa, they do the same thing. They come in and say, okay, well, you need to take 100 impala females and 50 warthogs and 75 blue wildebeest cows or whatever those numbers are. Well, then they harvest those animals, and that's what they sell in the grocery stores. When you go in a grocery store in South Africa, you walk up there, and it's not hamburger. It just says meat. And it's some kind of meat, but it's just meat. And so if you do a little bit of research, you can go over there and hunt those animals for just dang near nothing, because they're going to take
them
anyway.
Are you hunting them with your bow also?
They keep all the meat and resell the meat to the grocery stores.
Right. And they'll let you coal hunt with a bow?
Yeah.
Okay. So, because I've been to Africa once, and when we went on a Plains game hunt, and the land that we hunted on, we found out quickly that he owned a meat market.
Yeah.
And so, the guys on the ranch and stuff, the workers and stuff did get a fair amount of the meat, but mainly they were getting organ meat and stuff like that, the stuff that he couldn't sell in the market. And because we didn't end up eating any of the animals we killed, because he wanted us to eat the meat that was aged.
Absolutely. That's what
I tell
everybody. And
so it was aged meat.
That's what I tell everybody, is you're eating what the group before you was hunting, not necessarily what you shot.
Yep.
Which occasionally you'll get. I shot a sable 4 or 5 years ago, and we cut the tenderloin out of it and cooked it on the campfire just right there by where we shot it. And it was probably as good a meat as I ever put in my mouth. But like you say, normally you're eating what the group before you shot.
Right. Yep. No, that makes sense.
But other than that, I still got moose on my bucket list to try to get. I was able to finally, at long last, get a bush pig last year.
I remember that too.
Yeah. And that's another one of those silly quests, that one of those things that's hard to explain to anybody, because a bush pig, all it is just a feral hog. They're considered vermin. When I first started talking to people about trying to hunt one with a bow, they looked at me like the RCA dog. Like, what? Why? You know, if you want to shoot a bush pig, get in the back of the truck. We'll ride around and shoot 17 of them tonight out of the back of the pickup. But it turned into a deal, and then I finally got one last year. And then I talked to Danny. I'm supposed to go over in the middle of June. I talked to him a couple of days ago, and he's going to start baiting, and I'll try to get another one just to prove it wasn't an accident that I got one. But then other than that, I'll just hunt cull animals. I still want to do a moose hunt, but I've been on 5 or 6 fairly expensive moose hunts and just not had a lot of luck. So it makes it hard to book another hunt, you know. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. Well, I've had some bum luck on moose hunts, but I really, really want to get one before I get too old to do the walking.
Right. Where have you gone? Where have you concentrated your moose hunting efforts?
British Columbia mostly, but I've been to Alberta once, and been to Newfoundland once, and there's moose there. I mean, I've seen moose. I was hunting elk 5 or 6 years ago in Colorado, I had a moose walk within 10 steps of me, but I can't seem to get on a moose when I have a moose tag.
Right, right. A friend of mine went, I don't even get to be lying where, but somewhere in the United States, he drew a tag and went, and he killed one this last year with a bow. And it was a pretty easy hunt.
Yeah.
He shot it off the road, basically. You know, he saw it in the field, and it was on, you know, land that he could hunt on, and he got out of his truck and did a very short stalk and ended up killing his moose.
Yep, just the other end
so
of the pendulum.
It wasn't a giant, but,
oh, man,
but it was still.
At this point, like when Mark and I went on a hunt in British Columbia, and there were seven hunters with seven guides. We hunted 10 days and never even saw a fresh moose track. So,
I'm
to the point now, I would any moose would be a good moose for me. I'm way past carrying about a 60-incher. I'd shoot any moose I could get close to. But I've always struggled with that. I probably went mule deer hunting 10 times before I killed a mule deer big enough that I could even consider mounting, because I'd be up there, you know, you're up there in the mountains of Wyoming easing along, and the air smells good, and it's beautiful country, and you peek over a rock, and there lays a mule deer. Maybe not a very big mule deer, but he is a mule deer, and he's right there. I could hit that
right
one. And the next thing you know, well, I've done shot a little forky horn mule deer again.
Well, I can't blame you for that. I'm going on an elk hunt this September, and I've already told the guy I'm going with is that the first legal bull will get an arrow, and if I even get that opportunity. But I am not trophy hunting.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'll be proud as could be if I get that opportunity.
Yep.
You know, with a bow. You know, so no, I do want to kill a big, you know, a bull at some point or whatever. But man, this year it will be the first one I get a chance at, you know, so and be extremely happy, and I'll still get the jitters, and I like killing stuff too. I understand what you're talking about, man. I no matter what size the animal, really, just being able to draw back and put that arrow through one of them, that sound that arrow hit, and just everything about
it's great.
I love
it's great. My buddy Mark says I've got the restraint of a puppy when it comes to letting a deer walk or a pig walk or anything else. I'm pretty much on targets of opportunity.
Right. Well, I can't blame you for that. There's a lot of us have that same issue, man. I know several guys, you know, the older they get, they tell me that they're not mad at the animals anymore, that they like watching them and stuff. And I'm like, hell, I like watching them too, but I still like killing them, you know, and I'm not very old, but I just can't imagine a point in my life where I don't want to, you know, shoot something.
Yeah.
You know, now my kids are hunting, and so on my deer lease, basically I get to shoot a doe or something, and they get to kill the bucks, which is fantastic. I'm not complaining about that at all, but my daughter did gripe at me this year going on that elk hunt without her, and I said, hey, babe, I got to go kill something too. You know,
absolutely.
I'm going to take you next year, but one time I'm going to get to go and do a little bit of killing since you get to kill my bucks on the deer lease.
Yep.
So, but no, I can – I still love killing the animals. I don't see a time in my life where I hope I never stop having that feeling, you know, that's why we do it. So anyway, well, man, I really appreciate you coming on. I was getting goosebumps when you were telling me that story, you know, and I knew what happened and I knew the outcome, you know, but I never got to hear it, you know, in your words. I got to read about it and watch that live thread and everything. And
the live thread was
pretty incredible.
Cool. Old Bobby Minshew did a heck of a job with that. If you remember that thread, that was I couldn't see the thread when I was there. And in all honesty, it was such a overwhelming emotional experience. Going from the total exhaustion, you know, your side hurts and your hip hurts and just my old knees was killing me. Man, we walked, I mean, just hard and fast as we could walk for 6 days. And then suddenly all those emotions, even though the Steen outfitter, he said that moment in time when I was at full draw, you know, and he said he was standing right behind me and he said, man, your bow came back and those limbs were laid over. And he said, you turned the arrow loose, and it was like it took 2 minutes for that arrow to fly from us to hitting the elephant. He said, that was the coolest thing I ever saw in my whole life, coolest thing ever. But once I got out of that, you know, he actually carried me back to Kruger, and Danny picked me up at Kruger, and we spent the night there one night, and then he carried me back to the airport the next day. That night when I was laying in the cabin, you know, and I'm away from all that, in my brain, I had a hard time deciding whether that actually happened or did I just dream it.
You right.
know, it just seemed so unreal, the whole emotions and how huge the elephant was and the elephants charging at us and people screaming and gun firing, and it almost didn't seem real. So when I got back into Johannesburg 3 days later and opened up that thread and went back through that whole thread where I was texting him, you know, hey, here's what we saw today, here's what, you know, here's where we're headed in the morning type stuff, it was really a blessing to have that to look at, you know, and to see how many
right,
people,
that's your journal.
Yeah, it was yeah. I was so proud that he did all that.
Yep. Yeah, that was good. You had a bunch of fans back here,
yep.
a bunch of folks checking, hitting refresh on that computer often just to see if there anything new happened, and checking every morning and everything. But yeah, and then you'll have that, like you said, you get to go back on it and relive that, you know, and get to, because I forget stuff that happens on the hunts and stuff, and just to be able to go back and read something or watch a video again, or, you know, I remember things that happened, the feelings I had or whatever, even just looking at the that's why I get things mounted. You know, when I decide to mount something, it may not be my biggest buck or whatever. I mount that deer because of the hunt, you know, a lot of times, you know, I've got some deer that are bigger that I got Euro mounts done on. Than some of the shoulder mounts I have because something cool happened on that hunt or the reason I was able to take that animal, just a memory, so I can walk into my room where I have my mounts in and I can just look at each one of them and remember exactly what happened on each one of those hunts.
I had
a lady,
I had never counted, and I had a lady count mine, and she said I had 83 shoulder mounts.
Oh, wow.
And she said, that's just insane. I said, well, man, every one of them has a cool story. Every one of them.
Yep.
There's not a one up there that I can't sit here and talk to you about for an hour.
Right. Right. Yeah, I understand that. My wife keeps telling me there's no more room. We've got more rooms. We're going to have to push. Yeah, we're going to have to put them closer together and figure something out. Now you've got two kids that are getting mounts too. So, yeah, no, I understand that. So on your elephant, since it was a government kill, you weren't able to take any trophy home or anything?
Not anything.
Okay. I guess you got good pictures of it.
Yeah, I got the pictures and the memories, but yeah, I wasn't even nothing. You know, it 100% belonged to the government, got the ivory, and the villages took all the meat.
Right. Well, now, I mean, I don't know if I'd want a big elephant head hanging in my house.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well,
but you know,
at the time I lived in a house that I would have had enough room, and then I checked on the price of what it would cost to get a replica made and decided. Just the form, McKenzie out of their catalog sells a form that the taxidermist buys, and then he does all the painting and what have you. It's $8,500 just for the form before the taxidermist even gets started on it. So,
It
was a little deep for me, my pockets.
Yeah, you can go on several hunts for
Absolutely
that.
Absolutely, you can.
You know, that made up my mind pretty quick on that one. So, well, man, I really appreciate you coming on, and I know people are going to enjoy this.
Not a problem, man.
I did. That's awesome. I'll have to have you back on again in the future and talk about
I'll tell you a bear hunt story. I got a bear hunt story. It's
okay.
Pretty doggone entertaining too, but it's as long as elephant hunt. So we'll do it another day.
There you go. Awesome.
Right,
well, I appreciate you talking to me. Right. I'll make touch with you later. Thank you.
Bye.
you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, one star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lampers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.